Welcome everyone to today's What They Think webinar, High Speed, Low Cost Inkjet, What It Could Mean for Your Production Color Applications, sponsored by RISO and moderated by industry expert and What They Think contributor Andy Tribute. We're delighted to welcome the more than 300 senior printing executives from around the world who registered for this event. You were sent a web link that provides instructions for entering our presentation room, which allows you to view and listen to the program. Our interface is pretty simple, but if for any reason you are having difficulty, please send an email to help@whatthethink.com for assistance. You can also download a PDF of the presentation from the What They Think homepage just below news. Our What They Think Event Center also features a scrolling marquee at the top of the screen. Keep an eye on that for messages as we proceed through the session. You'll also note a button on your console labeled Questions. Clicking on that link will bring up a form that allows you to submit questions for our panelists. We'll be addressing your questions during the presentation, and we encourage you to submit them early so we can get to as many of them as possible during the session. Additional questions and their answers, if any, will be posted at What They Think following the conclusion of the session. There is a help button on the console as well, which will offer solutions to common problems. Again, if you have issues you cannot resolve, please send an email to help@whatthethink.com or just send a question to us through the question interface. Today's session is being recorded, as Claudia indicated, and the webinar archive will be available online, usually by Friday. I'm sure you're going to want to share this event with your friends and colleagues, or even listen to it again. What They Think would like to especially thank RISO for its generous sponsorship of this event, which allows What They Think to present this session to you at no charge. The revolutionary ComColor series from RISO prints up to 150 color pages per minute for half the operating costs of comparable toner-based multifunction peripherals. Capable of up to 500,000 pages per month, the ComColor models 9050, 7050, 7010, 3050, and 3010 are the fastest, leanest, toughest, greenest inkjet printers available today. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Andy Tribute, who will be moderating today's session. Andy is an internationally known expert in the applications of digitization of the media, publishing, and printing industries. He is managing partner of Attributes Associates and a longtime contributor to What They Think. Attributes Associates advises on technical and marketing issues in printing, publishing, and media. Andy's a regular speaker at conferences, seminars, vendor events on a global basis, often in a keynote role. In fact, Andy, you just got back from an event in Australia, as I understand. So let me turn the proceedings over to you.
Thank you, Carrie, and hello, everyone. In fact, as you may gather from my accent, I don't come from this part of the world, but I am speaking at the moment from one of the main suppliers' locations in Rochester, New York, and I'll let you guess which one it is, in another trip that I'm doing. Basically, what you'll see in this industry is we have had an amazing amount of buzz about what's happening in inkjet. It's been around for a long time, but at the last year's Drupa in Germany, everything was about high-speed inkjet, continuous-speed printing, and everyone was speaking about it. It was what everyone went to look for. And we saw a whole range of presses from Agfa, Hewlett-Packard, Impica, Infoprint Solution, which is IBM and Ricoh, Kodak, Miyakoshi, Osei, and Screen, and there were probably other ones I haven't mentioned. And the thing with these, they were all aimed at markets that were interesting. They were aimed at transactional printing, where it's not really a graphic arts application, but it's a major printing application where most transactional printing at the moment is monochrome. It was aimed at direct mail. It was aimed at digitizing the newspaper market. It was aimed at books to change the model for how book publishers and printers work. And it was aimed at commercial printing. The thing about these presses is though that they were very high-priced, you know, that you were talking in terms of prices between $2 and $6 million for a high-speed inkjet press that printed duplex. And we even saw, well, that's not true, we saw an awful lot of nearly available or next generation products. So it was mainly previewing a lot of these presses. A lot of them hadn't got to market. And one of the ones that was previewed that caused a huge amount of interest came from Kodak using a technology called Stream, which was aimed at actually converting the high-quality graphic arts market to inkjet. Stream is not in the market yet in terms of a color press, and you can expect to see an announcement about the availability of it at the next big trade show, IPEX, in the UK in May next year. Now, if we look also, you know, I talked there about continuous feed presses. But essentially, what we also saw was some interesting previews of what would be coming in future in terms of sheet-fed inkjet presses aimed at the same sort of market that the digital toner presses from companies like HP Indigo, Xerox, and Kodak Nexpress are doing. And Fujifilm previewed a B2 format, which is, a 30-inch wide press, the Jet Press 720, and Dynip on Screen previewed the TruePress Jet SX for the same size of sheet, 20 by 30-inch sheets. And these were aimed at the same market, as I said, at the high-quality electrophotographic toner presses. And they made use of what we could refer to as single-pass inkjet page width arrays. In other words, where you have the inkjet print heads that go across the whole width of the material rather than having heads that move backwards and forwards as you have on most inkjet presses. And they had speeds ranging from 100 to 180 pages a minute, and they claimed low running costs. Now, these are all claims because the product won't become available until next year. But again, we saw that inkjet was moving, the high-quality end, was moving into the larger format sheet-fed market. Now, what we've seen at the same time, and I want to put this into context to show where inkjet fits, is we saw a lot of development in the electrophotographic presses. Now, I use the word electrophotographic because if I use the word toner, certain companies who have liquid toner like to complain that they say I should be calling it liquid ink. But basically, electrophotographic is where you use a xerographic process to actually create the image. And we saw major increases in performance and quality in this sort of area from HP Indigo with their new product range, the 7000, the 6000, and the 7200. We saw the new Xerox iGen 4, we saw the new Kodak Nexpress 3600, and we saw the Zykon 8000, all upping the ante within this sort of market space in terms of quality, speed, and functionality. We saw Ricoh really coming and putting a spanner in the works for lots of people when they introduced the 90 page a minute C900, which really was aimed at challenging Xerox and Canon in the mid to high end market with lower prices and higher performance, and that's going to be an interesting thing to see how that goes. We saw much more quality in the light production area from Konica Minolta, who've been a real major player in that. And it's interesting, actually, just diverting from this for a moment, to see what the impact of yesterday's announcement of Osei and Canon becoming one company on the impact on Konica Minolta, who one of their biggest distribution partners happens to be Osei. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen in that. And what we've seen as well, we've seen a whole range of very good quality mid-range products in the sort of 50 to 60 page a minute space from Xerox, Ricoh, Konica Minolta, and recently Canon's come back into this area with a very interesting new product called the Image Runner Advanced C9000. So that's what's happening in the market area, and we're seeing what really is going on in that sort of space. Now, let me just talk a little bit about the technologies for inkjet. What we're seeing is if most of you probably got an inkjet printer on your desktop, whether it's in the office or at home, and that's fairly slow. They basically use a print head that goes backwards and forwards across the paper as it gradually lays down the ink to create a good quality image, but they're slow. And that's what we call multipass. What we're seeing in all these new presses is single pass, where the paper is the only thing that moves. The print heads are across the whole width of the material, and they stay still, and the paper moves underneath them, and depending on the speed of the print heads, that paper moves at speeds of anything from a few feet a minute to 500 or more feet a minute. What's allowed this to happen is development of what we call page width print arrays, where you basically take print heads and you stitch them together electronically and physically so they print across the whole range of the paper without any the ability of being able to see any joins between them. We also see the ability of putting more than one page array, so you can actually improve the resolution. So you may well find two or more page arrays for one color, so you actually lay down more dots, because these print heads may only be 600 dpi or 300 dpi or lower than that, so it depends on how on the print head to see what resolution we're getting. And we also may well find that you stack these printhead arrays to actually give you higher performance. So you may well find the different printhead arrays are printing as the paper goes underneath. So you do that, and also to give you nozzle redundancy in case any nozzle fails. We also saw a lot of development on new inks and ink technologies because when you start printing ink, when you're running at 500 feet a minute or something like that at higher speeds, that takes, you've got to dry that ink very quickly, and so you're seeing new types of inks and different forms of drying with heat dryers to get the ink to dry very quickly. And we're normally in this, in most of these high-speed ones, we're using water-based inks. But what we found as well, that when you use these water-based inks, that you can't print on any old paper. You have quite often to have a pre-coating on the paper. So one of the things you're seeing on inkjet is the need to actually have a special paper for pre-coating. Now, we see this in the office. If you buy, if you've got your office printer, you may well find you're buying paper with a technology called Color Lock on it. And Color Lock is an HP and International Paper developed technology that actually allows ink to adhere to the paper without sinking into it. So you're going to have to see in some of these new inkjet machines, specially coated materials. Now, what we're seeing at the moment in the office is most inkjet printing is desktop, we call Soho presses, small office, home office, with low-cost printers and high-cost inks. You know, the inks are the thing that really frightens the customers. But most office printing is not actually inkjet. Most office printing is dry toner, electrophotographic presses, and what we call MFPs, multifunction printers. And these run at speeds up to about 60 pages a minute, depending on the supplier. We did see office coming, inkjet coming into the office when HP a few years ago introduced a product called using technology called Edgeline, and this was called the CM8000 series multifunction printer, and it printed at speeds up 60 pages per minute in black and white and 50 in color. It, however, despite HP having major belief this is going to sell in huge numbers, it was very disappointing because people did not perceive it gave many benefits over toner-based systems, and the quality wasn't as good. I'm not sure if HP's actually dropped this product, or it's certainly it's not very high in the in their radar in terms of things. However, that's telling us what's happening. But you might say, are we missing something in terms of while all the activity at Drupa and other events was looking at the high-speed continuous feed, it was looking at the developments in electrophotographic systems, and looking at the new toner-based multifunction printers, was something else happening that we didn't, so that in a sense was below the radar. And I think there certainly was something significant that just was happening. And in fact, it was the hidden story of office inkjet, and it was the story of Russo. And Russo is the sponsor of this event, and we're very good to do so. And I remember Russo introduced a product called the HC5000 at Drupa in 2004 with 105 pages per minute speed and with a cost of well under $50,000. In fact, at that show, I was actually doing some work with Xerox, and one of the things I did was to organize some tours for very high-level Xerox executives to see what was happening in their competitors. And with them, I said, to start with, I'm going to take you to see the fastest cut sheet printer, color printer in the world. And they all said, well, we're on that. Xerox makes it. I said, no, they don't. And we took them out this little stand, and we saw this small machine, and this was faster than the iGen 3. And not just faster, it was about one-tenth of the cost of the iGen 3. And not many people really took much notice of the product at the time. And it was aimed really at the traditional Russo markets, which were really sort of spirit, the duplicators going into the church, into educational establishments and things like this. But this product added full color and very low printing costs, in fact, lower printing costs than any of the electrophotographic systems. Basically, we didn't take too much notice of it. I thought it was very nice. A little bit later, a few years later, Russo introduced the HC5500. Faster machine, 120 pages a minute, and a better print quality. And they actually, we were really noticing then that they were making a very high level of sales into a wide range of markets. And but again, it was somewhat below the radar, and people weren't really watching. Since that time, in fact this year, Russo has launched a brand new range of these products called the ComColor, and they range from 3010, which goes at 90 A4 pages a minute, up to the 9050 at 150 A4 pages a minute. They still use the same supplier of print heads, a company called Toshiba Tech, but the latest heads. And they're aimed at a range of list of applications that I should go through in a few minutes. And just briefly, you can see them on the screen as to the sort of applications we're seeing going for that. Now, to show what's happening in this, there's a brand new website that's only recently started, about the last week, which you see the list here, and it's for what is referred to the mid-volume transaction output market. And this is done in connection with an organization called Output Links. And it's looking at what's happening in the market segment for transactional printing between 50,000 and 5 million impressions a month. Now, 5 million impressions a month carries the majority of the transactional print market. And what is interesting to see is how that this little printer is causing a great degree of interest in the transactional document market, because its printing costs are about the same sort of price per page as these high-speed continuous speed web printers, but it's got a very, very low total cost of ownership. And so it's allowing sort of the new developments to move into smaller companies without a huge capital investment. It's allowing this technology that everyone seems to be talking about called Transpromo, where you're actually putting marketing messages on your transaction statements. But what's actually interesting, when you look at this, you'll find quite a few of the places that are using very high-speed, continuous-speed inkjet presses, particularly the earlier Kodak Versamark for transactional, is they're putting the resale machine in as a backup. Not just a backup, in case it can go wrong, but as a proofing system, so if you want to check out something without having to go to the problem of running a continuous feed, or if you want to reprint a statement or something, and so it's being used for that. We're also finding in certain cases that multiple presses are being put together as an alternative to one continuous feed press. So something that I think Riso even thought about when they brought this out in 2004, suddenly seeing this going into some very, very large transactional printers and becoming a key part of their whole production strategy. So what is this market? No, it's the mid-range inkjet printer market. And it's interesting that the current installed base of these light production inkjet printers is around 12,000 units. Now, that's a huge sale level. And of that 12,000, more than 10,000 of those units are resale machines. The others are the HP machines, and HP sold a little around about 2,000, which for them was a fundamentally disaster in terms of number of sales. Projected sales for the next 5 years are in the region of 2,250 to 2,500 units a year. And it's estimated that in terms of these recent report by IT Strategies that these inkjet printers are expected to take about 33% of this mid-range market. When I say the mid-range market, that's the mid-range printing market. So that's in comparison with all the Xerox, the Konica Minoltas, the Ricohs, the Sharps, the Canons, all these sort of people. It's expected that the inkjet will take almost a third of that market. In other words, it would be one of the biggest selling units from a company that really operates well below the radar. So it's a fascinating situation to see how that's developing. So what are the markets? You know, which markets are buying into this and what it's doing? And the interesting thing in this is when I talk at conferences and all the events, we talk very much about the pure graphic arts applications, the high quality applications, where you previously printed offset, etc. Now, some of the applications Riso is doing is in this sort of, but they're normally areas that the average sort of supplier to the graphic arts markets doesn't even look at. In the business area, you're finding things like office documents, you're finding manuals. Now, this could be training manuals, it could be employee manuals, all sorts of manuals, because not only is this a printer, it's also a binding system as well in the one machine. Lots of newsletters are going out. The more newsletters, so easy and simple, and newsletters in color, training material, and as I said, transactional documents. And if you look at the implant printers and the quick printers, you're finding the devices going into those sort of places, and it's all sorts of things that previously would have been printed in monochrome and now going to color. And the reason for this is it's the same price, generally, of print color as it would have been previously to print monochrome. So it's a no-brainer decision to switch these across because color is giving you so much more potential. And in the print-for-profit space, you're finding quite a lot of brochures, direct mail, lots of forms, flyers, posters, and if you look at sort of thing you might find in a supermarket, etc., you're being able to print nice sort of color banners, etc., or posters for promotional purposes on special offers and things of this nature. But the areas that Riso is really well known for is the education, where you're finding it's being used for handouts, for lots of student study aids, for test forms, for reports, all sorts of forms, all sorts of educational products, and where it's being used in the schools, in the in the colleges, etc., to print all the sort of printed documents that they need. Another area that the average sort of digital print supplier doesn't even talk to is the religion area. And you'll find in religion, churches are making, and religious organizations are using great use of these for doing briefs on sermons, and indeed posters, and forms, newsletters, material, outreach material to talk, you know, to send out, what you might term religious marketing material, directories of information. So the sort of things that, again, they're going to color, whereas otherwise they'd be in black and white and they wouldn't have the marketing penetration. And then lots of non-profit organizations are seeing this. And again, for non-profit organizations, it's ideal because of the low cost of running. They're doing their brochures, their direct mail, all their fundraising materials, calendars, newsletters, postcards, a whole wide range of things. And surprisingly, there's so many different areas that one doesn't necessarily think about that are being printed. The traditional work that RISO has done, and this has raised the RISO profile significantly when you look at the sort of areas that are now being seen. So at this point, what I'd like to do is, rather than you listening to me for the rest of the time, is to actually find out what is happening from a couple of the people who've adopted this technology to see what their experiences are, what they've found it's doing. And first of all, I'd like to introduce Carl Gallo from Station America, who will tell you exactly what they do. So Carl, it's over to you, and thanks very much.
Okay. As Andrew said, my name is Carl Gallo, and I am a distributorship and print shop, digital print shop, strictly digital, since 1988, so 21 years. We're located in Miami. That's a picture of me and my building outside. It was taken yesterday, as a matter of fact. And we have one RISO ComColor HC, not the ComColor, but the HC 5500. And we've got two other single-color RISOs, the one color where you put in the drum and you just switch out the color. And we also have a full-color Zante Lumina digital press. On the next slide, that's going to show us, let me see here if it shows us the next slide here. Okay. That is a picture of our back office. We have a lot of warehouse space at Station America where we print in large volume and we warehouse it in air-conditioned space. And what do we use specifically the HC 5500 for? Well, big part of my market is the financial industry. So in the financial industry, we print a lot of notices that get generated to, with the bank logo on it, and then they imprint the different CD is overdue or whatever, your loan is ready, that sort of thing. So a bunch of notices that they imprint at the bank level. We print a lot of stuffers. Stuffers are not only for the banking industry that get the monthly bank statement, but we do this for insurance agencies as well and some medical billing companies. These would be full color, 8.5, 3.5, cut size. You see a picture of Steven, who runs the press in the back in the green shirt. He's got the electric Martin Yale cutter there, so we'll print them on 12, 18 sheets and cut them down. We can print two up for flyers. We print a lot of flyers for local businesses that are advertising, whether it be an auto repair shop or the electrician that's got some sort of special going on. Restaurants are very popular. We print a lot of menus on this as well. We have our own graphic department, so we'll go ahead and we'll design custom holiday items for our customers as well. In the banking industry, that would be receipts and coin envelopes. It prints coin envelopes just fine. It prints regular envelopes, anything from number 10 to a 9x12, and we'll print full color. So where in the past I used to have to sub out for full color envelopes, I print them all in-house. For the insurance industry, we also do a lot of direct mail. They buy the list or we buy it for them. They want to hit a particular market. We are addressing, folding, and inserting into envelopes, sealing, and then putting our bulk rate permit, all done right there on that HC5500. Another good application that we use it for is imprinting. If a customer needs spot colors on their letterhead or some sort of a sales sheet, we go ahead and get that printed out because we're strictly a digital shop. And then at this location on that machine, we'll imprint the information that they want or simply an address at the bottom and then send it. As you know, in the banking industry, there may be, one main purchaser with 20 different branches. So it's a perfect segue for that because now they'll have the 20 different branches. Each one wants their own letterhead. Well, the profit margins are there because it costs really nothing to imprint a box of 500 or a pack of 500 letterhead. Flyers, newsletters. We print newsletters. We do not do the booklet making or anything like that. We do not have that add-on, but we sub out for that. We certainly print it here and then get it done. We do a lot of personalized desk pads. If somebody needs just a small quantity of four, where we print four up on an 8.5 by 11 sheet, and they want it in color, something that you would do with an ad promo item, you would send it out. Well, we can print it right here. We have a paddy wagon, which you see there above Stephen in the picture in the upper right-hand corner. We'll glue it, pads of 50, and deliver it. It's quick. It dries quickly. Full-color envelopes, personalized desk pads. It does it all for us. It's paid for itself in about 10 months. That's it for me, unless I have questions.
Much indeed. That was fascinating to hear some of the things. And also, as you say, the time scale, you know, that it's paid for itself in 10 months, which is an ideal sort of structure. What I'd like to now move on to is I'd like to introduce you to any...
Andy, before we move to Penny, there was a specific question for Carl wanting to know if he's got a marketing and sales force.
I'm it.
You're it. Okay.
Yeah. I do have my daughter who is just about to graduate from Florida Atlantic University in graphic design. We do have a pre-press department. Stephen, who you saw in that picture in the green shirt, is also very good in pre-press. Difference between pre-press and graphic design, as you probably know, is pre-press can put your logo there and size it and things like that. Graphic design, well, that's an artist. That's a creative eye. And that's what my daughter will be doing when she comes in. But for marketing and sales, it's just me, and it's the old-fashioned way. I get out and I visit everybody every day.
Great. Okay, back to you, Andy.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. Can I move on now to Penny Oest, who's the from University of Memphis. So, Penny, would you like to take over?
Thank you, Andrew. Again, my name is Penny East. I am with the University of Memphis. Pretty much what we are here, we are an implant in an educational facility or an educational market, and we have a number of different applications that we use these inkjet printers for. Let me give you a little history. Back in 2003, with the economy and everything, the university decided that they needed to close down the offset printing department. Instead of just closing everything down, I came in March of 2003 and decided to start turning everything digital. During that time, we had to start outsourcing all of our business cards, letterheads, envelopes, some of the forms that we were doing. Unless it was black and white, we really were having a hard time doing it. Any type of mailing, direct mail, anything like that, we had to send out, we had to outsource it, and it started costing the university quite a bit of money. Let me move on to my next slide here. Oh, that's just me. Hello, everybody. This is slide 17 here. So what we did, we went ahead and we purchased a few of the Rezo products. We purchased some V8000s, which are the two-color duplicators, and we've got the HC5500, and then we've also purchased through Rezo an Okidata PSI 3655 envelope machine. What we use it for is all of our letterheads, envelopes, distributions, communications, any mailings we have, course packs, you know, just everything that you see on the screen, that's what we've been able to use it for. What I can tell you, within the first 3 months of having these machines in-house and having them running, we were able to save the university over $100,000 just in outsourcing fees. So it made a huge difference in a short amount of time, and the machine did, all the machines paid for themselves very quickly. Move on to the next screen. For the letterhead and envelopes, we use the V8000 and the RN2235. The V8000 is the two-color duplicator, and Rezo was able to match our PMS colors. And the RN2235 is the single-color duplicator. And we used, I mean, we, like I said, in the very beginning, these were two of the machines we had, and we were able to bring so much more back in-house. What we weren't able to keep in-house still were the direct mailings. Now, the distributions, what we would have to do for, you know, the distributions on campus, we would have to create labels, and we'd take a label and peel off, this goes to, you know, the Department of Art, this goes to the physical plant, this goes to the president's office. So we had all these labels, and, you know, we're a large university. We've got over 20,000 students. And so it would take us quite a while to do that. So we purchased the HC5500. That pretty much changed everything for us, because not only could we do full color at that point in time, we could do full color almost at the same price that we were doing monochrome. We could also do variable data. That allowed us to bring all of the mailing services back in-house, which saved the university another very large sum of money. The biggest thing about the HC5500 and the thing that I looked at closely, I've got a mail piece quality certification, and when you work with the USPS, there are specific printing specifications that you have to meet, and with the dot pattern that the HC5500 uses, it definitely met the guidelines for barcoding. So we haven't had any issues with that. In addition, you know, and following Andrew's step here, we do, you know, all the office documents, we do training manuals, newsletters, transactional documents. We did switch, you know, probably 60% of our, 60 to 65% of all of our monochrome black and white work to color. We do direct mail, forms, flyers, posters. We do course packs now in color. Fundraising materials, calendars. We do the student planners for on campus. Postcards, we do student handbills for different organizations on campus. And, you know, I mean, just any possible thing that you could think of to be printed at a university, we're able to do now. Again, you know, like I said, the biggest thing for us was keeping everything on campus. Because the minute we start sending monies off of our campus, then we have to start looking at, you know, where are we going to cut? Well, if we keep all the monies on campus and they go back into the campus, then we don't have to cut. So, as you can see by this slide, you know, that's what we started doing. On the picture at the top where it says this week, at the very top of each of those is each department and everybody's name. And that usually takes maybe about an hour to print all of them double-sided and send them out. So, you know, the time is minimal, the cost is minimal, and, you know, the color is wonderful. Now, if you're looking for graphic color, then this probably isn't what you're looking for, in my opinion. If you're looking for a good, solid, commercial color, then this is exactly what you're going to want, okay? We print all of our faculty transparencies. We print all of the presentations for everybody on campus. The list just goes on and on of everything that we do and what we use it for. My machine configuration, currently I have 3 of the Rezo V8000s. I've got 1 Rezo RN2235. I've got 1 HC5500. I am going to purchase another. I've got 1 the PSI3655 that I purchased through Rezo. I am going to get another one of those. And then I've got 2 Oseis and a Canon. Now, I was actually able to cut back on my color and black and white. I needed to purchase another color machine to keep up with all the color work. I no longer need to do that. Now, for half the price, I can get an HC5500 and to do the work. And on my black and white, I've got the Oseis 4110. I did have 2 machines in here. I was able to let one of them go. My Canon 105 black and white is probably as old as dirt. I don't have to use it that often because I'm able to use my 5500. So just about everything we do is surrounded around what we can actually accomplish on these machines, because they have changed the way that the university actually does printing. It has changed the way the university does business. Again, the biggest reason for me purchasing these machines was to save the university money, to keep all printing in-house, and to be able to, watch. I want to know that I've got quality control. If I send these jobs out, I lose control of the quality. I lose control of the time, and then I've got to look at the pricing. I get to keep all of that here, and that works really well for us. And that's about all I have.
Thank you, Penny. That's fine. I've got a series of questions, but I'm going to bypass those for the moment and go straight to some of the questions coming in. So what I'd like to look at is, first of all, I've got a question here from Mark Busanic. His question is, Penny, will you be leasing or buying your new inkjet devices soon?
I will be buying them.
Okay. And you bought all your equipment?
I'm sorry?
And you bought all the equipment, have you?
Yes, I have bought all of my equipment.
Okay. There's a question appears for me here from Jenny Wu, which is, projections on the number of units in a previous slide at 2,000 units per year would represent only about 40 units per state. The number seems small. Are you saying that this 2,000 would represent 33% of the light production segment? I'm only working on the numbers I'm getting from the industry figures I'm being given. And those are sort of the scanned figures that we're getting. So it would appear that that is the correct assessment. It depends, because there's so many different assessments in terms of numbers that are there in terms of the light production space, in terms of where it's going. So I wouldn't like to guarantee those figures are correct. I'm only working from figures I got on that from a company called Infrasource. It's something we can look at more, and I'm sure that InfoTrends or something like that would probably do something. So it's something I can look at and see what the situation is. But certainly the product is selling well, but in terms of how many per state, I wouldn't like to say. There's a question here from John Jacob. Do you need special paper to print on the HC5500? Could you, Carl, or you, Penny, say what papers are you printing on?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Penny, if you go first.
Okay, I'm using the Rezo paper for some applications, and other applications I am using a 28-pound hammer mill color copy, and it's what I typically use for all of my color, and it works great.
And is that, when you use the Rezo paper, do you know if that's got a special coating on it for inkjet, or is it just the standard paper that simply get, you know, they would market rather than you buying it from a Staples or something like that?
Well, no, it does, some of it does tend to have a special coating on it. And if you're going to have a lot of coverage, that's a great paper to use. If you're not going to have a whole lot of coverage, and, you know, that particular paper also brightens up the color somewhat.
Okay, yes, it's probably got a coating on it. Carl, what are you using?
I didn't even realize we sold paper. I've been buying the Hammer Mill. The 28 pound is like a 70 pound text. Also use a 100 pound text for thicker applications, obviously. If it's a throwaway item, I use a Husky, a 60 pound Husky. And it depends on the quality of what they want. But Hammer Mill, you're going to get much better quality.
Are you printing on any heavier stocks for anything?
Yes, absolutely. We do print on 100-pound card stocks. We use that a lot for imprinting on holiday cards, like if we buy blank holiday card stock. And then on the inside are birth announcements, then we'll go ahead and print those cards flat, which are already scored on the HC 5500 with whatever the person wants to put on the inside. So absolutely.
Do you see any difference in quality when you print on heavy stocks?
No, I do not see any difference in quality when I print on heavy stocks. However, this is not the same quality that you'll get from a 4-over or one of these Canon toner-based products that can print on high gloss stock. This is definitely filling a niche. It's extremely cost efficient, and it does a wonderful job for what it can do.
So if you have a requirement for something of a higher quality than that, do you outsource that, or how do you do it?
We do one of two things. We either print it on our Zante Illumina, which is a 1200 toner-based DPI, or we'll, even sometimes it's even cheaper just to send it out to like 4-over or Supercolor, one of these super trade printers.
Okay. We have another question here without not many specific name, and it says, at the appropriate point, can you just discuss if there are any issues with inkjet print quality, and if they are you using inkjet media such as ColorLock? Now, I think, as Penny said, she's using the special Riso paper, which is probably equivalent to Riso technology to ColorLock, which gives you a better quality. But in terms of print quality, from what you were saying, Carl, it fits, you know, into a niche. Are you finding the same thing, Penny, in terms of the type of markets it fits in, or does it fit all university markets for quality color?
Well, I believe that it really, like Carl said, it really has a niche that it needs to fit into. I do not believe that you can go out there and say, oh, I like this machine, let me buy it, and then try and sell it. I believe that you need to understand what it is you need to use this machine for before you purchase it. If you know that you've got a niche for this machine, then it's probably in your best interest to go ahead and purchase it, because you can add more applications to it. As far as the quality of color, you have to understand what it is you're buying. You are buying a quality commercial color. You're not buying a graphic color. This is a quality commercial color.
So extending on that question, when you bought this, both of you, what else did you consider? Did you consider the mid-range toner systems such as a Xerox DoctiColor 252 or something like that, or a Konica Minolta 6500, or did you only look at this sort of technology? Carl, what's your comment?
Yes, I did. I did look at the higher-end Canons and the Xerox. I had the reps come by, and basically it came down to the reason I purchased the HC500 was much more economical, not only to purchase, but, you know, the cost per print.
Sure, yeah.
And for the work that those Canons and Xerox were going to do, I send it out to these super trade printers, and they do a fantastic job. They do it quickly. Mm-hmm. And so that, I figured that end was covered by them. But nobody does, you can't source this kind of work. This kind of work is fast. I can. Somebody calls me up and they need 1,000 full color flyers. By the time they drive here, they're done, ready for them to pick up.
Are you actually finding you're becoming an outsourcing for other printers who may have the sort of the Canon and that sort of work, and they're finding a need for your sort of work and they're outsourcing it to you?
You want to know something? I do it for one copy center. He's got a full color, like Toshiba, I think, and he's got a lot of monochrome black and whites. And I do print some of his full color stuff, but it's a good suggestion. I didn't even think about that, for me to go out to other printers and be a source for that. So thank you.
Well, that's my role as a consultant. That's my free consultancy for today.
Very good.
Penny, in terms of when you bought, so did you look at other technologies, or did you see this fitted your need and it was just the only thing you looked at?
No, I did look at other technologies. And I did purchase for the same reasons that Carl purchased. In addition, with inkjet technology, you don't have a toner system. And you don't have to go through a fuser, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Toner has to go through a fuser, which means that if you bring it, you print your letterhead, and then you give it to somebody, and they run it through their little desktop printer, that toner is going to, when it hits that heat, it's going to start peeling off.
It's going to ghost, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And with this HD5500, you don't have to worry about that. It doesn't do it. You can run it. You can run your letterhead and your envelopes, and you can send them to your customer, and you don't have to worry about that ink tracking off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd like to move
to... Andy, there's a lot of questions about the drying process.
Yeah.
Maybe we could get into that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, on that sort of basis, then, in terms of... I haven't got to one of those yet, but in terms of when you're printing... Sort of a wet ink. What is it? Is it? How does it dry? Does it dry by just evaporation, or how does the drying happen? Or is it always dry?
Penny?
Yeah.
The ink actually has, and I'm not real familiar with the way the ink is put together. The only thing that I do know is that the ink has a specific type of drying agent in it, so that when it comes out of the machine. You can go ahead and pick it up, and you don't have to worry about any offset on it or anything like that, and you don't take your finger and smear it.
Okay. Yeah, it's actually, the ink is slightly different from other inkjets, and it's an oil-based rather than a water-based ink, so I don't know how that affects the drying process and what it looks like, but it's a pigment-based ink. So basically, there's a question I have from John Jacob, which is, are these inks dye-based or pigment-based? But the inks are actually pigment-based, but in an oil sort of structure rather than... some the other inkjets, which are water-based with a dye or a pigment. So, and I think that's one of the reasons why perhaps the drying situation is changing a bit. But I have a question here from Paul Carroll, and he says, what do you estimate the cost per piece is? And commenting on the total estimated cost per sheet of ink, maintenance, paper, or standard offset paper, so they can determine what a standard sort of cost per page is, and let's say it's a reasonable reasonable coverage of color. Carl, what's your... figure on that?
I want to say, and this is just a guess by looking at, they came in, they being the Riso sales reps, and they pitched 0.6 of a penny. So after a year, I said, add up all of my maintenance and add up all of the ink that I buy. Now, I bought the machine outright, no lease. So it was very easy for me to just pull a report of what I paid Riso for these things, and I made sure I separated because I have other Riso machines and I buy other inks. So for just that HC5500, and it was pretty much spot on, right on the money. And so that
0.6 of a penny is not including the paper. That's the cost of the
problem. Not including the paper. That's okay. Correct. You never know what media you're going to put on. It could be an envelope.
But it's amortizing your purchase cost over the amount of prints you've done.
That included maintenance and all the inks that I bought. That's the only thing you have to buy is your inks.
It's not a click rate. You buy all the consumables as you need them.
That is correct.
Okay. Let me look at another one. There's a question from David Dieter. He said, I looked at Riso when they were first introduced, and at times set off from the ink was a problem. Has set off been corrected? Penny, I think you said it was came out dry and didn't smear.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. There is a drying agent that they've added to the ink. And again, it really is the paper you use. If you put glossy paper in there and it's not rated for the glossy paper, it's going to smear off.
Okay.
Okay? If you use the Rizzo paper,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to smear off.
Okay. So basically, if you're going to do coated paper, your recommendation is make certain you buy the specially treated paper from Rizzo rather than a standard paper.
Right.
It won't print coated paper.
Okay.
It won't.
Right.
The ink just does not penetrate.
When you say coated, do you mean a gloss coated, or a matte, or a flat matte coated, or something like that?
That's correct. And even matte coated, it has to, the shiniest it gets that I found. I haven't seen that Rizzo paper is the hammer mill, but it
okay.
looks good on the hammer mill.
Yeah.
I mean, but it won't be the gloss that you've seen
sure.
from other people. So, just want to make sure that's straight.
Yeah. Another question from John Jacob is, can you run these letterheads again for your later printers without any problem? Is that something you said that you could do, sir? I think it was you, Penny, was that?
Yes.
That's correct, yeah.
Yes, that is something you can do.
Okay.
But be careful with the letterheads now. I mean, I don't print letterheads on it. What I do is I print the imprints of the letterheads on it.
Sure.
Because the CMYK color is not spot color, and if somebody is picky about their PMS 201 burgundy or their 295 blue, for example, you are not going to hit those spot colors.
So basically what you're saying is it's fine for you to print onto someone else's letterheading, but it's not you're not the organization perhaps do an accurate letterheading onto which someone would then laser print onto that with the text.
Yeah, it's not going to ghost, but like what I'll use it for is to print you know, the address or the person's name in a blue in typed font, you're not going to be able to see that color is not in part of their logo. So if their logo's a circle, you're going to see whether or not that is off color. But when you print the person's name or their phone number or their title, it's close enough, and everybody's always accepted it. So I don't print letterhead, but I'll imprint the letterhead.
Okay. I've got a question from Ed Brown. It's a question I was going to ask you myself. Is, have either of you had to replace any of your print heads on the presses since you've had them?
I'll answer that. When I first got the machine, within a month, there was a print head issue. It was faulty, and they came out the next day, and they fixed it. And I've had the machine about 18 to 24 months, I think, now, and not a problem since.
Have you had anything like blocked nozzles and things like this? What happens there?
I call out the technician. It's happened maybe once or twice, and they are out the next day.
Okay.
And they fix it.
And if you've got a blocked nozzle, is it very apparent on your print that you see a blank line in there?
You see a streak. Sometimes it could either be a slight blank line or a slight thick line.
And so do you have to run a regular daily maintenance for head cleaning or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Any problems you've had, Penny?
No, I've not had any problems. I have had, of course, if the machine sits, because being a university, you know, we're off quite a bit. And once the machine sits for a while, you know, you start it back up and you may have streaking and everything, but pretty much all you have to do is go in and clean the print heads on it. And, you know, it's basically just going into your menu, push the button, say clean print heads, and it cleans them out, and then it runs fine again.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I've had. So I'll go to one or two questions that I've put forward beforehand. I need to get there first. Second. Losing touch with where I am. If we look at the quality on the press, we've already been through the quality, and you've said there's work you cannot do because of the quality of some of the factors, so you're not aiming to do the sort of work that's going on to that you're out operating. But most of those questions were ones that Carl addressed, but is there anything that really you're not doing in terms of quality, Penny?
Well, I mean, every machine is rated to do what every machine can do, and the quality, like I said, if you want graphic quality, because we are a university and we do have a very nice, you know, graphics program here, we do get a lot of call for graphic color. And we cannot use, you know, the HD 5500 for graphic color. So, you know, when, of course, we can't, you know, it's not ready to do graphic color, it's ready to do, you know, quality commercial color.
Cool.
So that's pretty much really the only thing we can't use it for.
Okay. I've got a question here from Mark Busanich in saying, are you preparing to transition from the HC5500 to more one of the later model comm colors. Are you planning to do that sort of transition when you purchase other presses, or you said you'll get another one, Penny. You're going to buy another 5500, or are you going to go for a comm color, the 150 page a minute or something?
Well, I'm going to look at them.
Okay.
I'm going to look at them, and I'll make that decision, based on what I think when I look at them. I do know that I'm going to purchase something within the same line as what I currently have.
Okay.
Again, the newer stuff, see what the quality is and, you know, the pricing and everything that goes along with it. And, you know, once I look at the whole package, I'll make my decision then.
Okay. I'd just like to finish the event with these three questions I've got here on the slide in terms of what you'd like the press to do in future. For example, what does the press not do that you'd like it to do? Carl, any points on that?
You know, I don't operate it, but Stephen, who you saw in my slide in the green shirt,
yeah,
does. And I think when it's a thicker media, it won't duplex. I've got to run it twice. So it definitely duplexes the text weights, but if it's an envelope and I want to duplex, I have to run it, let it dry for an hour, and then run the other side.
So you answered the second question I got there. So the third one is, what do you perceive are the limitations of the inkjet process in what you do? Is there any things that it really is bad at?
You know, you're not going to get the rich colors, as Penny was saying, that you would on a toner-based machine. So for that, I outsource it. But it's not designed to do that. It is designed to do documents, like we'll do condo documents. It's perfect for that. So for what it does, it is perfect. I won't ask a horse to come into my house. I have a dog for that. So this fits the perfect niche market, which is good quality on non-gloss paper. It does direct mail for me. It does flyers. It does color envelopes. It prints on all sorts of different media, not super thick, but thick enough. Not gloss, but glossy enough, in which I say by the hammer mill paper. So it does a very good job for what I want it to do.
Okay. I'm going to skip Penny on that answer because I've got three more questions I want to just take before we close down. First of all, Penny, the question is, what about workflow and data preparation? Any special considerations you have for working with these machines?
I guess I would need more clarity on that because really there is no... I know what the machine can do. And so when I look at my workflow, I know exactly what can be done on that machine. And, you know, because the machine prints so quickly, it's not an issue to get it done.
Now, as a continuation on that workflow question coming in from Richard Lee, it's basically saying, how are you driving the printers? Are you using standard Windows drivers, PostScript, PDF? What's the driving systems you're using to run them?
Okay, right now I'm using typical, you know, just your typical PostScript. You can use a Fiery driver, and I've actually got a Fiery driver on one of the other machines that I've gotten from Rezo, and it really makes a difference in the color. If I want to match a color, it really makes a difference, and you know, the Fiery driver makes a difference. But currently with the HC5500, I'm just using regular PostScript drivers.
Okay. Carl, any difference from you?
Yeah, we use the Fiery, and we have all the graphic design programs, and that's what Stephen uses to send to the press, and he is able to that is a very good thing about the HC5500. If I say, you know what, lay down a little bit of ink, the quality on this is not very important. It's just a background phantom image of their company. He's able to do that. Or if I say, you know what, I want this to be better. I want the leaves to pop out. He can tweak that not only on his end, but he can also go on the machine end. He can choose high quality 1, high quality 2, high quality 3, low quality, and obviously low quality is going to use less ink, and it's going to cost you 3 cents of a tenth of a penny.
Oh, thanks. I'll just close this with one final point that's come in, which I can answer. And there's a question coming in saying, are there any other players in the light production inkjet segment, and who are Risto's competitors? Well, the surprising thing is, at this stage, there's nobody else in the light production inkjet segment, apart from perhaps HP, who played about this, and I'm not even sure if they're still in that area at the moment. But otherwise, there's no one in that sort of space, and this high performance, low-end market that Risto is in, there are no competitors. Surprisingly, this is a niche that they have found, that nobody has produced another product that's anything like this in terms of speed, the type of work it does, etc. And they've basically done extremely well in that. So it's interesting to see whether they will be alone in this segment for long and see how things are going. But otherwise, I'd like to pass the thing back to Carrie so she can close this down. But thank you very much indeed, and thank you, Carl, and thank you, Penny.
Okay, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and my thanks, too. And just, you know, for our audience, normally we don't focus on a single product like this, but like Andy said, because it's quite unique in its own niche, and we have a lot of questions, so there's obviously a lot of interest in what this can bring. There are a few more questions. I'm going to send them along to you, Andy. You can take a look at them and see if you think we've covered them or not. If we haven't, we'll try to get answers posted.
I would
really again like to thank Penny and Carl for participating. You guys did a great job, shared a lot of good information. And, of course, I'd like to express our appreciation to our friends at Risto, whose generous sponsorship of this event has made it available at no charge. Hope you'll all stay tuned for news about future What They Think webinars, including a December 2nd session on eco-friendly, profitable, large format, which is sponsored by HP. Then our own Dr. Joe Webb with his quarterly Economic Outlook webinar on December 9th, and our final webinar of the year, which is sponsored by GMC, Maximizing the Value of Customer Communications, will be held on December 16th. And those are all available for registration now if you go to the webinars link on the What They Think site. Don't forget to put these on your calendar as the busy holiday season approaches. Also, don't forget to visit our webinar archive at whatthethink.com, where you can find lots of great sessions for your viewing pleasure. We do hope that you